Yep.
Thank you all for coming. This is a work session, and I think it's one of its kind as far as Planning Commission is concerned. And we will be consistent with this, you know, in the near future. And like I said in the email, we're not taking any action. We just want to, you know, gather as much information and ideas and recommendations from you moving forward. With that, I'm going to refer to our new director, Walker, for his keynote address.
Hilarious. So pretty much, I think just from my time on the Planning Commission, and then kind of like my time kind of around the region, just kind of noticed that Planning Commissions had kind of deteriorated into just kind of a rubber stamp for businesses in a lot of ways and for developments. And I think from the outside looking in, I think people just kind of want to be pro-business, get projects through as fast as possible. But I think for some communities, it kind of does them a disservice. And then I think also it's really frustrating when you're on the commission and it's like, well, if I just approve this, why are we talking about this next time? we're just approving this already. And then it really just kind of does a disservice to y'all. Really kind of does a disservice, like I said, to the entire community. And so I kind of wanted this to kind of be the first step in the direction to kind of get the Planning Commission back to what its intended purpose is, as far as kind of being the way for the community to have an input as far as what the aesthetics should look like, what type of projects, how do they want projects to be presented, how do they want them to go through, really kind of have like real impact, real opinions. And then I think also really kind of take ownership of what the built environment it's going to look like, from sidewalks to trees, things like that. And I guess like the aesthetics of the building, designs, all of that. I think that's going to be something that I think as we go forward, something that we'll probably pay a little more attention to. I think also looking at different uses, I think we'll try to piecemeal it as best we can, as far as different zoning districts, different uses, kind of trying to modernize them. I think we've already kind of ran into, okay, well, like, does this work here? Has anyone thought of this type deal? Really trying to stay ahead of that and try to be as flexible and as fluid as possible. For the code going forward, but that all kind of starts with y'all, so that's kind of why we plan to have these probably quarterly, just kind of like every couple months, just kind of talk about like what we didn't like, don't like, what are some things we may want to change, what are some things that kind of noticed around the community that you probably like to see done differently. And so I think by incorporating this, I think we'll kind of be able to give you guys a little more input and say over the built environment, which is kind of the whole point of having a planning commission anyway. So
man. My kids follow me here.
Council's here doing stuff too. I can't explain the kid voice.
Okay.
Yeah. Council's here.
Well, thank you. This agenda is just feel free to bring in anything, any topical issue you want to discuss. This is just a mere guide into what we could talk about and several topical issues that we've listed. With that, we can start by asking your ideas as regarding expectations from applicants or business owners who come in for any kind of land use applications. What more do you want us to do in order to better present their case? And I think from our point of view, we've discussed that either the applicant or their representative or the business owner, and, you know, in that sense, should at least attend. And so if they don't attend and we already have it on the agenda, it would be preliminary. We would not make any decision to approve anything until they appear before the Planning Commission. That's what we've resolved and that what we think we should table before you in get your recommendations on that.
That's great.
Yeah, so when I worked in Clemson, that was one of the things, like it was a requirement. If you didn't show up for your agenda item, They're just like, are you here? Call your name a couple times, and they just table it until the next time, and you have to get back on the agenda, go through the whole process again.
That's how court is, right?
Mm-hmm. Because what it had transitioned into was either someone from the planning department or someone from the actual commissioners advocating or explaining the applicant's
business process.
And we have no right to do that.
Right, and there's no way we can make a decision based upon our perceptions of what they're doing.
Even a little bit of a twist on that is late in the last year or so, I've seen more of the owner sending the surveyor to the meeting, and the surveyor knows what he, he knows his part of it. But so, I mean, I would say however you're writing that, it would have to be like the owner, when you get into owner's rep, and then if they're sending somebody that doesn't know anything about the project or as a surveyor, that really should not be answering some of the questions. I think you really need to, when you define who has to be here, to have that defined down to the owner a partner or something.
Yeah, like
somebody
ownership has who
responsibility to make decisions.
Yeah, so like an owner's rep who would, to qualify, you'd have to be able to answer like sufficient questions of the planning commission. Probably define those, but yeah.
I forget what project it was, but that gal.
What was the car wash thing?
Oh, yeah.
Yes, like she was very well informed. That was great. Then on the flip side of that, then, no names named, but as you were saying, we'll get projects in front of us, and the person is local, and they don't show them. There's nothing we can do. We can't go on anything there.
Yeah, and I think that's like the other thing. I think I'm used to, I've seen developers like from, so I guess like for Clemson, I mean, like getting to Clemson's like not easy. Like you either fly into Atlanta, drive 2 hours, or you fly into Charlotte, drive 2 hours, or you fly to one of those, then fly to Greenville and drive an hour, get to Clemson. And we had like this big housing developer from Dallas, flew in his whole staff of five multiple times, like just to come talk to the planning commission. And that was the expectation. I'm like, cool, but if you don't show up, like we're not hearing it.
We build all across the country, and our architects have to show up in front of the planning commission in person in every single city.
So I don't understand like why it would be a different standard for here, like why we, like, I mean, like if you want to build something that's going to be up for about 50 years, then the least you can do is just show up to the planning commission to talk about it. I think it's how I feel.
Absolutely.
So
maybe
it's kind of a sideways, so it's like a lateral note. When we are hearing the applicant and they have community comments, it would be nice to hear from the applicant first, and then let their neighbor chime in after that.
Yeah, can I go just hit a couple of things here?
Yeah, please.
And that was one of the top ones on ours. When Dr. Ramstead was here, and it's no fault to Jonathan, because Sarah was gone too, so it was just kind of in the blank. But there is, and I did actually send some stuff to Dr. Ramstead to help with it. Our public hearings were getting really totally out of control. Started on the back to go to a meeting where we had apartments being built up by college and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So there is a set thing, a list of how it goes about, you know, like you would start it and then Jonathan would open the public meeting, and that would go to the developer to explain what's going on, and then there would be so that the public knew, and then the public would have their time, but there was no interim. When the public was up there, they just spoke to Jonathan, and they couldn't talk back and forth, or they couldn't direct traffic to questions to the owner or to another person sitting there. It was, you present your thing. It's like what happens at the city council meetings. It's just, you come up, you give your thing, and you just go sit down. And then they close the meeting, then it comes back to us. And we've heard the discussion from the public at that point in time. So most times our questions are, we take the information we've heard and we direct it at the owner, the developer, and not so much with, and not go back and forth. And once the public is done saying their things, they're done.
They're done.
And we just need to get that list, and we need to stay with that list. Otherwise, the public hearings get just totally out of control, like we've had a few times. And I can, if you don't have a list of how to run the meeting, I can send you my draft that I sent to Dr. Ramstead too. But it's just from that. So my other comments are, I just tried to list some of the things that you guys bring to us. Mm-hmm. It's like conditional use stuff, new plats, replats, site plans, TIF, city land sales or annexations. Each of those has a different list of questions, and I'm not trying to pick on you and Steve, because that's what you were trying to get to. Mm-hmm. But like, if you're talking about a site, a plat, there's only certain things that really come into play. You know, you've got stuff like stormwater plans and surveys and parking spaces and all the things that you guys have, but they don't all come into play when you're doing, say, a plat. The plat doesn't really concern stormwaters. So we need to know, okay, if we're doing a plat, this is the only things that really come into play. We should not be asking questions about stuff that are not in play. And but then when you get to a site plan, then stormwater starts to come into play, because you need to know, you know, what's going on. But if you guys could, like, come up with some kind of a list that says, okay, new plats, this is what's open for discussion, or on conditional use permits, so that we don't get sidetracked and get off. And you know, just to the point that we don't get off into something that isn't even related to what we're discussing. So I mean, if you guys could somehow just kind of come up with a little list and say at this type of hearing we do this, and this is what we do.
There is one caveat to that we ran into a couple times here, and that was on the applications for approval of sale of city property in support of a development project. And of course, the sequence of those type of projects is they put it on the agenda for presentation to the commission and approval without providing the underlying documents, without providing anything but a summary discussion of what the project is, knowing that if we're going to approve that, it's pretty difficult for the city council, having gone through the planning commission and the city council approving the land sale, and then having objections to the development as these secondary applications are made for conditional use, for platting, for whatever. So we, you know, in those type of projects, we really do need a detailed overview at the initial approval of sale of city property.
That's exactly what I mean by an onboarding, because if you're just thrown into it, you don't know which questions to ask when, and you end up asking all of them at irrelevant times. So yeah, it would be very nice to have those defined.
Some kind of a list that we go
like. Yeah.
Oh, can I sure. update Jonathan where we're at? So right now we're just we're on the first page, but we're just it's open discussion. Yeah. So right now we're just kind of, I think like the last discussion was just kind of like a planning commissioner onboarding process, but kind of what I'm hearing is that we may need to do like a training and like really kind of go through like a flow chart, each one, maybe we'll kind of break that out, probably not December, but probably like January, and kind of go through it. That way, like, we all know, everyone can have, like, a list of questions, and then also probably just, like, include it as, like, a reminder just on, like, for each application. This is what's up this time, and so these are relevant questions, these are concerns, but that's where we're at.
Cool. Yeah, just, I know some nights we could have got out of here in a half an hour meeting rather than an hour and a half meeting, just because we got into discussions back and forth with the general public. I don't like for the college people. They had a bunch of them, and the one on Zoom was just kind of. I mean, on GoToMeeting was kind of crazy, and then I think we really need to. The other thing is we just got done with the driveway rule for commercial stuff that just got approved here, right before Sean. Left as a city engineer. That's always been kind of a hassle with commercial people, because the people wanted to go big, wide driveways. And so that rule is set in concrete now. But stuff like that, and then we really need to take seriously the comments from the city engineer and then the utilities, and if there's other agencies, fire, police, and stuff like that, because they know what the standards are on that, and it shouldn't be open up to us anymore.
Speaking as a city engineer.
No, but
you want to be hired? I mean,
I'm tired.
No, I was utilities, not city engineer. But. We just need to really take into consideration what they're saying, because they're trying to go by what ordinances are that we don't always that we always don't know, and utilities and other outfits have their sets of rules that we really need to not say, well, get into the discussion of trying to, we had that many times with the parking, with the driveways, where the city engineer come in and said, this is the rules, and we ended up voting against him because the developer wanted bigger stuff, and that is a pretty sad thing to come in here, because they're making decisions on what's right, and we're making it on what's popular. And that shouldn't be, but so I guess that's most of the, Jonathan and I both have a list of questions, the seven things we have to read.
Yeah.
And those are, there's two different ones. One's for
the plan review
plan,
and the
just for the
finding, yeah.
Yes, impact. So there's two of them,
yeah.
And that's almost kind of what I was thinking for, like all these different types of hearings, is that you'd have a sheet, and even if we, I don't want to make the packet thick by putting this down, but if it's somehow that I just mentioned, we need to know, we need to stay with what is relevant,
yeah,
for certain hearings,
yeah,
so to keep it.
What's topical to what's in front of us.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, like a cheat sheet for each land use application.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. And I really didn't mean to say anything about you and Steve, because the rest of us learned that picked it up along the way, but you're right about the coming on board, and then it's just kind of natural to
right. And that's
especially you two that have the, you're used to going through all these different steps of stuff, and but
take
you're not but you're not basically lined up with, okay, this doesn't pertain to this hearing.
Exactly. So. And that's why whatever the last one was, where it was just a minor subdivision, and we're talking about parking spaces and traffic studies.
Yeah,
and
yeah, it's not in front of
right.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's taken me a year and a half to catch up to that, and we could save ourselves so much time if we were to just educate people as they join.
All right.
So that's my big spiel, so I'll turn it over to the lawyer.
Oh, no, I'm ready for the next agenda.
Okay.
That's
can
fine.
We...
Yeah.
What if we want to vote no?
Oh, nobody has ever done that.
Well, it feels like... it feels kind of like they haven't.
Well, no, it's... There's been people voted against that.
I was going to say, definitely. I know. I think I have before.
I know I have.
Yeah, I was going to say, I know Cletus has for sure.
I know. I'm thinking I'm the only one that I've ever heard.
No.
Okay.
The,
especially like TIFFs, I'm like...
But I think the thing that really gets, and I know it gets you sometimes, is the stuff... We don't even get a chance to see it, and we don't get the details. And we—I mean, I don't want 10 pages of, excuse me, lawyer talk. I want just to cut to the chase and say, you know, this is what's included in here because the deals are already made. The whole unknown business thing out there, everything that came to us was already decided before it came to us. For a decision, so it's like all we're doing it, you're saying we need you to decide this, and it's like no, you just want us to rubber stamp it so it can go on.
And so the council doesn't have to take responsibility for it because the planning commission recommended it.
Yeah,
it's on the record.
Like, especially when it's like a financial decision like that.
Well, here's another thing. If an application comes for this. For the transfer of city property to a private developer, and we don't have a purchase agreement, and then the people that are presenting it aren't the applicant, but the planning commission, telling us that there is a memorandum of understanding, which we know in the legal field is unenforceable, and there is no purchase agreement, or at least we're on the sixth or the seventh amendment or redraft of the purchase agreement, then you're not ready for planning commission. I'm telling you, we cannot approve something that isn't even on the books for the city to enter contractually.
I think there was a whole lot of pressure from Dave Ramstead and Aaron Bachman. On several projects in this last year and a half, 2 years, that it came to us and it was like our questions weren't even relevant to that. It's because the only thing was important is we got to get this building built, and we got to get this building built, and we got to do it now, so we don't have time to get you paperwork. Or all of a sudden, we get a call and we get a special meeting, and we haven't still received paperwork, and that's just.
But just an assurance that he's had this great conversation with the developer, and we should just go with it.
You know, at a few points on these applications, I've gotten the impression that the information was not provided for that purpose, so that. We could get it through, get them rubber stamped, and get it out of here.
Yeah.
We don't want the real issues or the difficult issues to be identified and discussed. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I will say I've been kind of surprised, disappointed almost, at how non-contentious all of, like the planning commission meetings I've been to, like kind of in the region and here. I mean, I've like very big developers already invested like almost $1 million. And I've been to planning commission meetings and I'm just like, don't care. Answer's no. And it's just been like, that happens. They have like real concerns. Mm-hmm. They have like, they're just like, you did meet them. We told you. Like, you either change it. I do not care. And, like, I've seen it and it's just, it gets really, really hot sometimes. But I've just been really surprised and it's just like, oh, are they presenting? Well, sure, yeah. And it's not necessarily that it has to be contentious or that you're trying to waste people's time, you're trying to waste people's money. But at a certain point, though, if it's consistently a black box, then it's probably purposely a black box. And I think that's what we want to get away from, of, like, it should be presented up front. The questions need to be answered. If you don't have your details, you can't come to planning commission. That happened recently. Of like, no, like, why can't, like, well, normally it's just like this, and I was just like, well, I'm not changing it, so, like, that's the,
I would just like to be able to leave the Minnesota Minnesota door and say no.
When a week or weeks before the thing came to us for decisions, and we're reading in the front page of the paper that everybody, including members of the city council, and the, you know, the department heads and stuff that are trying to push it through are just, oh, it's all wonderful, there's no problem, it's all going to be great. Mm-hmm. Well, to me, it's just like some of that needs to be toned down so that it can go through. The proper steps in the proper order. And,
I agree.
You know, some people can say, oh, yeah, this would be a nice development, but you know.
Conveying a sense of urgency does not...
An emergency on
your
part
does not make any sense. No,
and we had several of those this year.
Yeah, where it felt like they were just rammed right down us. And with hardly adequate time to review the packet, these like hour to 2 hours before the meeting additions to the packets to our plans, and just having to feel like just some sort of this, it feels like it imbues it with the sense of obligation almost. We're like, well, I guess we have to act because we're all
And I think that that's another thing that I want to stop as far as Problem Instituting, that people come pretty much prepared to present everything, but under the understanding that it's not actionable tonight. You come, you talk on a preliminary basis, you talk about what your project's going to look like, site design, colors, color scheme, the entire thing, like the whole thing, and then you guys give feedback, yes or no, I don't know if I like that, actually could you change this? That's much more what I'm familiar with. They coming through and just kind of, because I can't tell you, like, the guy came and it was just, he had his whole team there. Aren't these pretty pictures? This building's so beautiful. It looks like this in the Northeast. They just kept groaning. The more he talked, they weren't even making a decision that night. They were just like, well, I just think you have a lot of information that you're wrong. Like, all right. But that's how it should be. There needs to be, like, just trying to get a sense of the commission, of, like, what the commission's opinion is. But it can't happen if they've already been assured that it's gonna pass prior, because then your opinions wouldn't matter anymore.
Yeah. Every agenda item always has staff recommendations are for this to da 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 da, and it's like, okay, well, if you already approved it, then what are we even doing? You want us to approve your approval?
I would say I hope that, like, on the matter of nay votes, I think it's the number one way, in addition to tabling them, just to hold applicants accountable as far as giving enough detail, and also it's sort of a way to hold staff accountable. If our presentation isn't adequate, then, I mean, the point being, feel free to disagree with our recommendation. We kind of hope that you would.
He just opened a door.
No. I mean that's what it should be. I think going forward, inadequate presentations will not be made if you're not ready to present to planning commission. We're not going to allow it. You're not doing the whole, like, I'm submitting this 2 days ahead of time. I want a planning commission meeting. No.
Do you have the purchase agreement? No. Well, then.
All right. You should talk about it.
And the other thing that I've really noticed the difference in the last 2 to 3 years is we hardly, very rarely did we hear TIF coming up. And now TIF is included in every project. And I kind of have a little bit of a understanding of how the TIF works, but I guess I'd like to, some point in time, you know, if we got a short meeting or something, maybe yeah, just kind of go through how all that does. I know money flows back somehow to them to supposed to help with stuff, but I mean, some of these things are like 20-year plans, 15, 20 years, and and that, my understanding, and I'm probably wrong, which might be the first time, but that the taxes that they pay to the city of Wilmer is frozen kind of at some kind of a level, isn't it?
Yeah, so the so how it works is like the taxes that were existing prior to the development are what the tax rate is going forward.
That's the way I understood.
Yeah.
So isn't that going to come back and kick the...
Well, the point is that like it goes into other stuff and like, you get it through the ancillary benefits and all this other stuff. There are plenty of people who say TIF is just like crock of BS and like it doesn't work. There's a lot of literature that says that it does work. So,
but when you're... The city has had to reinvest in other things to get this building to going, has had expenses, and the owner-developer is only paying taxes for what was being paid when he bought it, and the city should be collecting big monies on big projects for that to go into their treasury. The way I understand it, that we're not getting it in for 15 years, but it seems like just everything is. Everybody's getting it. Everybody's applying for it, and everybody's getting it.
Like, I have to put out all of my previous tax information and all of my income and all of my blah, blah, blah. If I want to get a loan, or if I want to whatever, like, what are the parameters that
what's
somebody
the threshold
qualifies to earn a TIF.
Yeah. And does it feel like we are at a point where, like, every, you know, it's going to be the norm rather than the isolated?
The commission is, we need to understand that is our role. It's not Ramstead or the planning commissioner's planning
the department.
Department's role to approve TIF. To approve these kind of tax breaks for developments. They're going through the research. They're the ones that are on board, and it's not getting to us.
That's
until well into the...
Well, not even the relevant... The one TIF that I wanted to strongly vote no towards, like, their financial status should not... qualify them to be exempt.
This will be an old example. It was before I was ever on the commission, before any of us were. Holiday Inn. And this is not the last redevelopment.
The original,
it was the earlier redevelopment where the chamber's offices were put in there. And around the time that was approved, there were articles in the local paper about the history of the persons who owned the corporations that owned the Holiday Inn, and of course it was a local banker and family members, and they own banks all across the Midwest, and they own hotels and motels and restaurants all across the Midwest. Very wealthy family. And here in Wilmer, we're giving them TIF breaks. Mm-hmm. To remodel and make greater value for income production out of this real property that the rest of the city taxpayers are subsidizing going for years. Mm-hmm. And those articles, and I did research at the time, and I'm thinking, oh man, not the right development.
How long was that TIF for?
I was going to say, man, they go on forever.
Some of these last ones have been 15, 20 years.
Yeah. With that one in particular, is that maybe a same 15, 20?
Yeah, maybe sometime if we had a short meeting or something, you could just put that on your list to kind of almost need a flow chart to say, like, okay, this is what they should. If they didn't do TIF, this is what they'd be paying us for the next for those 15 years, and with TIF, this is what they're paying us. And I know it's trying to get them to come here to build, but they're making money during that. That stuff too.
I agree. I have no problem with the Planning Commission all of a sudden becoming like the most scrutinizing entity in the city. I am for that. Should we get rolling on the agenda? Yeah. Anything else? So I guess that's like the expectations for reviewing applications. And then I guess the next thing was eliminating parking minimums and going with parking maximums. We haven't come up with what parking maximums, what they would be. But we do want to remove the floor. That Subway man with 37 parking spaces makes me so mad.
Are you speaking from the Planning Commission perspective?
No, I'm talking about
the city planning department's code.
I mean, I can say both, but even from just like from like a code perspective, we would eliminate the requirements for parking in the business district, and in the business districts, and then it's the high density districts as well. But so what it would do, it wouldn't be if they didn't want to build parking, they wouldn't have to. But what we don't want is like someone who could probably get by with 10 spaces in a driveway have to build 40 spaces in a driveway. Mm-hmm. That's silly.
It's resources.
And I think it's driving up the cost of development, and it's really just not good for the built environment. Also, I mean, like the mall, like that parking lot. I don't know what they're, but they're gonna do about repaving that. But I imagine that's gonna cost a lot of money.
So how do you determine it?
How do you implement a maximum? Okay, let's say this development of this subway. Let's say that. Well, how would it read? I guess it's confusing that this project is approved with a maximum of 50 parking spaces so that they don't have to have any, but they can have up to 50.
No, so we'd probably be choked down.
But you'd still have to have your ADA parking spots.
Still have to have the ADA parking.
But you know what's going to happen with that kind of a concept? Developers are going to say, okay, we're going to give as few as possible. As few as absolutely necessary based upon our own study of what our parking needs are, not what the city's study is.
I don't remember the number of parking spots on that one, but a lot of things, you're going to have a lot more drive-through people, but you're still going to have people walking in like you do at McDonald's or some of the other ones. You still got employees that you have to cover employees.
So this isn't that they can't build parking.
How do you eliminate, and it's like we said, how do you tell them? I mean, to me, it's got to be some kind of a minimum based on employees and people that are coming in to do stuff without going 40 parks, spots.
What you would end up for?
I just don't know how you'd do that.
Yeah, you'd end up putting the parking burden on the adjoining residential streets, on the adjoining businesses, on the adjoining public parking that's in along the city streets. And if you're going to approve a new development in any location, it ought to be able to service its needs. It ought to be able to service its customers, its employees, its suppliers.
That's true.
And if you say a maximum but no minimum, that's not what you're going to get.
So the maximum would be, that was one of the things, if we institute the maximums and remove the minimums, the one of the things we wanted to decide was whether or not it would be a staff decision to allow them to go over, or would that be something that would go to the Planning Commission?
To allow them to go over a maximum.
Right.
But it would be their desire to go over the maximum when the question arises, mm-hmm. not a minimum.
Right.
So who sets the minimum?
There wouldn't be one.
Would I?
And so pretty much, so I guess like with how I've seen it is, I mean, generally speaking, I think we can all agree that developers are in it to make money, not trying to lose money. They don't want bad projects. So they're usually going to come with an idea. They know how much parking they generally need, and then sometimes they have to stubbornly build more, and then they're just like, I don't know if I actually need this. And so I don't think it's a bad thing. We have to rely on the developers and their studies for their parking.
What was that one that had, they had to have a gajillion parking spaces, and there was two that were like right in the middle of the big truck lane, and we were like, eliminate that so people don't get their cars hit.
Oh, yeah.
And so they had to have that many parking spaces based on whatever the rule is.
Yeah.
And that's what I'm hearing you say. It's like more like a, like when you go to the pool, it's like a capacity kind of thing. Yeah. Like there's so many people in the pool, let's not have more people jump in.
But to me, that would, if you totally eliminate the minimums, so in theory, somebody could take in the subway and you could put it on a postage stamp because I don't need anything. All I got to worry about is a place for the cars to drive around and go through. Yeah, I'm going to have walk-in, but I'm not going to worry about that. And all the employees are parking out on the streets, and there's no place for the employees to come. So, I mean, there's got to be...
But with the
site plan, I mean, you would just say that, well, no, this amount of parking is not going to work.
What if it was like a tiered situation based on the type of business it was?
That's probably how it would be anyway.
Okay. I mean, I just...
You'd have to explain that to me.
So you would y'all would want to see like what no minimum and then like what the maximums would be to consider it.
Has this been done anywhere else?
Yeah, plenty of places.
Well, I think the capacity, the staff and customer capacity of a business is usually the benchmark to measuring stuff like that. So if I'm thinking that's the route we could go with, you know, I think eliminating, now that I'm hearing, you know, ideas from different perspectives, I'm hearing different perspectives, I feel like eliminating could be a little strong word in this case. Maybe regulating, you know, parking could be what we could look into. I'm just having a rethink now. But, you know, in any case, I think we could use staff and customer presence, like on perhaps daily basis to, yes, please.
Rather than reinventing the wheel, can we go back and can you provide the history of why the ordinance is what it is today? Because studies went through that to get to that point as to what the needs are for parking spaces on the different types of businesses. And if we ignore that, then we're going to go in a backward direction, and in 10 or 15 years from now, after a lot of public dissatisfaction, we're going to be coming back to the same issue and redoing it again.
Like, that's always part of their plans, right? It's like, sorry, I can't share this with everybody, but like on their title page to their drawings, they have to go by the local code and say what their floor area is, and then figure out their occupant load and whatever the load factor is. I don't know what that means, but that, you know, divided by that ratio, and you get, this is how many people are actually going to be there at any given time, and that's how many parking spaces you need.
Right. Wasn't a lot of that based on, the old formula is based on square footage of the building.
Yeah, and so a lot of it was very arbitrary. Yeah, and it's very arbitrary math.
That doesn't always make sense, especially, I mean, things are changing, and there's, you know, just in the restaurant business, for the You know, that type of thing, but there's, you got to look, you got to do some common sense way of saying you got to cover your employees and you got to cover a number of
your capacity. Of that,
without blowing it up and saying, oh, this is a big store, so it's got to have 50 spots for your employees and your normal customers might only be 10 that you're going to have to cover. But you don't tell them it's zero.
Oh, well, no, because like the other thing, like I was saying, like, I mean, if someone did try to come in, excuse me, build a restaurant, only build 2 parking spaces, in the plan review, you guys, y'all would have the ability to say, no, this is not enough parking, we're not going to approve this. So that's the other part. Like, you would
basically
be empowered.
We set the minimum, in a sense.
Yeah, you could, per
the plan.
So like what makes sense to you, and like real life lived experience of like, I don't like,
you're placing a lot of discretion then on the planning commission to approve when you're not going to have the basis for that. You're not going to have the knowledge, the knowing what the need is for that business and how it affects the adjoining businesses and the residential units around it. That's the reason why you do have it in the ordinance. So we can look for that and make sure those projects are satisfying at least a minimum requirement.
I don't think it's fair for you. I mean, for us to make a decision. I mean, you guys have got all the background on it.
Right, okay.
So that's what you guys are going
to
have to.
So I don't want it to seem that like we're just going to come here and they say they want this amount of parking. What do you guys think? There'll still be staff recommendations. There'll still be staff opinions. Like, we'll do the necessary research. There'll also be developer studies saying, okay, I have 5 of these businesses all over the place. Here's what my average parking is. Here's what my average visitors are. And so I think based on all of that, this is the amount of parking that I want. And then we would say, okay, well, like, we've looked into it. We've kind of, like seen it. And so maybe, like we think maybe they could decrease by 5. Maybe they can increase by 5. But that's the information you would have going into it. So it wouldn't be you'd be going into it blind of, like, well, what does 25 sound like to you, Jonathan? I don't know. Maybe we could have 35. And so it wouldn't be like that. Like, there would be, like, fact-finding on our part. There would be fact-finding on the developer's part. And then the discretion would be up to you to either stay within that range or just, like, oh, well, these numbers don't work for us.
The one that really comes to my mind within the last couple of years is the Domino's on First Street when they built that whole mini mall, the strip mall thing, and they were telling, there was, I think, originally 5 suites in that, including, and they didn't know what was going to be in the other ones at the beginning of it, but they said, well, we'll allow 2 parkings, because they were really cramped, that place is cramped for it, for parking, we'll allow 2 parking spots for each of these 5. Well, you didn't, and they said, well, if it's going to be like an insurance agent, him and her secretary are going to want to park, and then you might have 1 or 2 people coming in, and so basically the employees are parking on Minnesota Avenue and Montegalia Avenue, and it's just, you know, that was a case where everybody, they wanted the building, they only had some more space.
Yeah, because I think
and it really got messed up because there's
office space in the same place, having a salon. I think it's a salon and several restaurants because Gila Brotos is right there. And then Caribou, there's always people driving through for Caribou as well.
If you want to talk about parking, let's talk about Little Caesars. What is going on over there?
My goodness. Yeah, there's no stacking. I go to that gym.
Right.
Yeah, you go during the day, man. They're like, they're piling
on
the first street.
They're packed all over.
They're just piling on the first street.
Papa Murphy's over by the
Walmart. By Walmart. Walmart, Qdoba.
I mean, try and pull in there around lunchtime.
Yeah, that's impossible.
And there's no other parking spots except running across the street with all those people coming out of Walmart driving crazy.
They're a little driveway. It's not like Twisty Turny. You can't.
Yeah.
I have actually pulled in there, couldn't find a parking spot. Another time I pulled in there and said, I'm not putting up with this, and left.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. So anyway, just figure out what you want to do on that, I guess.
More information on the parking minimums, parking maximums.
Parking.
We'll take your recommendations.
Parking guidelines based on site development.
Yeah. That's,
you know, parameters.
That's
like
what
your
I'm gonna be on. Yeah,
like,
just not. It's like you said, it is based on square footage, and it's super arbitrary, and so you end up with these massive parking lots.
And so, eliminating parking minimums, I would say, get rid of that word eliminate and parking minimums. As per recommendations of staff, just if you say
that's
eliminate parking minimums, it's just that's kind of
how about just okay, let's
that's kind of a nasty word.
Resolve to study the parking minimum requirements for the type of businesses we're approving.
Mm-hmm. We can do that.
And in the location of the city that it's in.
And that's
yeah,
I'm
certainly
not talking because
yeah,
if you're asking to get rid of what you initially stated that we are looking to eliminate parking minimums, you're not going to get a lot of support. I'm just telling you. I'm coming from the business perspective because
I get it.
Come on.
Yeah.
Which is why the preliminary meeting is very important. Because at that level, all that will be sorted out by the time the applicant is expecting either an approval or denial in the next meeting. We sort out everything, requirements, bring it back in the next meeting. These are the conditions, these are the requirements. Fix that and come for the next meeting.
And the comment I was trying to make, if the basis for the existing minimum requirements or requirements for parking for commercial and business development were not based upon the accurate number of spaces that are needed for the operation of that business to service its employees, customers, etc., then that's what needs to be reviewed.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and you go back and you look in your files and see what was the basis. If it was square foot of the business, there's a huge difference between service, retail.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Absolutely.
People, and refine
we agree,
that
yeah,
rather
and manufacturing.
Than... Yeah, refine it within the ordinance.
People that
itself
are looking to build, say, like the just whatever building, a new business is coming into the world, and they want to build that, they're going to need to come to you in their initial before they even start looking for land, and they're going to have to say, well, this is a building I want to build. How much parking am I going to need here? Because they need to know how many square feet of property do they need to buy, so that something has to be kind of way up front. Has to be. They need to know certain things before they. You couldn't say, well, just go out and buy a lot, and then we tell them, oh, it's not going to fit. That's not.
Oh, they don't like that.
No. So
this is a need more information.
Yeah, certainly.
And, yeah. Certainly. So I just gotta.
You know, I understand that you're looking at making these changes for the development of businesses or approval of applications for business development going forward. But we do also want to address what we have down here in the Central Business District. We don't have parking minimums in the Central Business District because we don't have space for parking. All of these little lots have been historically what they are, and they're not going anywhere. And if you take away the existing parking, which is primarily now public parking, then it's going to be pretty difficult for someone on the Planning Commission to get to that little line item that says it does not have a negative
impact
on the value of surrounding properties. When the surrounding properties are business properties and they can't find parking for their employees and for people that are coming to deliver and for their customers. And that, and I expressed this in the past in the Block 25 development.
Yeah.
Yes.
And we do. If you look at the charter, and you go back to Charter Section 4.02 Subdivision 5, it gives the Planning Commission the authority to make recommendations for ordinance amendments to the City Council. It's there.
How do we do that?
Well, put it on the agenda, come up with an ordinance amendment, and present it.
Yep,
are you telling me we can add agenda items?
Yeah.
Well, if
I need an onboard.
If the charter says that.
What charter? You keep referencing this charter.
Is it gonna be like a city?
Yeah, yeah.
That's the Bible. That's the Constitution.
Anyway,
of
the reason this came about is I understand a few. The rumors started spreading around town about our main public, city-owned, public-owned parking lot adjoining the courthouse, the hospital, post office,
library,
across the street from the city offices, library, the church, right there on the grounds, all needing large parking areas because I'm telling you, people from Candy High County come in to use these facilities from outside the county. And if you take away that parking, okay, my thought was, we have our ordinance that does not require a minimum for downtown development. So the city planning with the Renaissance zone and the new development zone decides, hey, let's renovate the only property that's available to renovate, and that's city parking lots downtown where we can't expand city parking. In that meeting on April 21st, Dave Ramstead, I wrote it down, and then I listened to it afterwards on the tape, in addressing my concerns was the demand for parking, driving parking, is what really gets the ramps developed. You know, he was talking about parking ramps.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If you have surface parking, you're never going to see a ramp. So if you really need, to start to have development here, development will drive the need for parking.
So you take away your parking to
take
more parking.
You take away existing developed improved parking spots that's owned by the city to service the businesses, the properties, the residential all around the central business district. You take it away. Give it away to a private developer to increase the volume of residential or commercial development, and that will drive the need because now we'll really need more parking.
We already do.
Because those developments cannot support their own parking needs.
Yeah, and cities.
And I'm thinking, well, that's really insane.
The city twice has been right on the verge of building a ramp in Wilmer, and both times they just got put off. And it's, you know, like this case. I mean, I saw the nightmare coming right away. Is what? So they sell off the parking lot by Bethel Church, so you can put a guy there. Okay, day one, the contractor shows up. First thing he does, puts this chain link fence around the whole parking lot. And all of a sudden, you got, I counted one day, it was over 200 parking spots in that lot, and it's dang near full almost all the time. Where are they going to go? Oh, we need a parking ramp. Okay, well, so that's 3 or 4 years at a good scenario.
But where's it going to go?
These 200 people are going to park, have no place to park for 2 or 3 years or more. Mm-hmm. Waiting for a ramp to be built.
If you've already given away the only properties that the city owned that could suit a ramp, then you're talking about raising the existing buildings or it's never going to happen.
Yeah.
And you've got a mess. And you're creating a mess.
Yeah.
Well, I didn't know Dr. Ramsey was going to be leaving when he did, but I told him and Aaron Bachman, we were talking about that one day about that. I would never ever vote to put a building on that, to sell that lot without having the parking ramp done beforehand. So the only way that it's going to get that done is we only got 1 year left on our term. So,
but you know, the idea, the suggestion I have here, and because I've heard this from other businesses, they've asked me, "What can we do to ensure that we can preserve our parking?" We can recommend to amend, or we can even propose to amend the existing parking requirements that do apply to the central business district by requiring for any new development that it either supports its existing business if it's going to take away existing public parking. That any lot for lot that's taken away from existing public parking be replaced with new public parking of a similar nature in a similar location. Well, so there's two things here. Number one, the development is going to increase the need for its own purpose, for its own operation, and it's going to take away from the existing public parking. That's what was done on Block 25. And if that happens on Block, what is it, 55?
50.
It's going to be a much worse situation because that's the primary parking for all of what's going toward the north. And that's actually a public staging area. I mean, you can go up there and take a look at it. Every holiday, every festival, every wedding that occurs downtown, every thing that happens in the library, there's people out there. Mm-hmm. I've had, you know, the people that put on this on behalf of the city come in and ask, can we put our porta potties on your parking lot? And my response, okay, I call my insurance. Well, you're not insured for that. If someone gets hurt, it's your liability. So I said, well, why can't you just put it 1 or 2 feet over onto the public parking lot? Oh, idea.
So maybe we should move along, huh?
Yeah.
We'll look into that.
Yeah. So the landscape plan, adding canopy requirements for developments. So this is one of the things that you could get in lieu of parking. So when I say like canopy requirements, let's say like you require like a lot to have 40% canopy coverage, and so pretty much they would plant trees, but like what you measure is like what the trees would be at full maturity and like what the canopy would look like, and then how much of that would cover, how much canopy coverage, and then like divided by like the entire lot itself. And so then pretty much just by strengthening it, instead of it just kind of being like natural grasses and shrubs, it'd be more trees. And then this could also work in conjunction and probably have a clause of like places that are already close to boulevard trees. That way we're not doubling up, even though I don't think we can't have too many trees. But yeah, so we'd probably exempt places that were already had access to boulevard trees. But pretty much, if this was something that y'all supported, then just kind of determining a percentage, like whether you wanted 20% or if you wanted 40% or even higher.
And after a few other.
So just, we've had so many new apartment buildings going around up here. Like the one up on, the one with the four buildings up by the, on County Road 5 North.
Yeah.
Okay. Would those parking lots then have to have islands in the middle to plant trees, so there's going to require more space to for their property to just on all the island and stuff space that you're losing. I mean, they would need more square foot to cover the same number of parking stalls.
If they still opted to build like the same amount of parking. That's the thing, though. If the parking requirements are reduced, then they'll probably have space for tree plantings. And it's probably cheaper to plant a tree than it is to pour concrete for parking spaces.
But they're still going to, like, for apartment buildings, those are pretty well locked in, the number of spaces they.
I don't see how you can make parking flexible on a multi-housing unit. It is what it is. If you're going to have a two-bedroom unit, you can expect a couple having two vehicles. And if you give them one parking spot, you're going to have it up and down the street blocking the single-family residence or the businesses. I mean, that's just...
Well, no, I don't think there's any... I shouldn't say that. I think most people would be okay with having some more trees in there parked on their property. It's just finding the space for it and doing that. So.
I'm going to keep it on task.
Any other comments on the landscaping plan? You guys just probably want to see an ordinance of what it looks like.
And they usually have like a list of native plants that you can...
have to be approved, like an approved tree list. We'd work with Public Works to make sure it's an approved tree list, an approved species. And then also they'd have to show like what the trees would look like at full maturity, and then actually prove, well, this is like what the average like canopies are, and then this is how many trees we're going to plant. That way we can meet it.
I'm super bummed I can't find a landscaping plan right now. Anyway, it's not important. But yeah, you have to plot out where each tree is going to be, how much canopy coverage it's going to be. It's
20 years from now.
Yep.
Yeah, I mean, it's standard in a lot of jurisdictions, and it really does improve the...
Yeah, projects just look a lot better with it.
Yeah.
Projects just look a lot better with it.
I can really tell the difference when I drive up. What is that? Not Fifth Street. But maybe like 8th or 9th Street, and it's just a canopy of trees. And it's like, oh, this is so beautiful. I love Wilmer. And then you go up like 2nd Street South.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, God. Yeah. What happened here? Anyway, sorry. Love it.
All right. Affirm.
Now we're getting to Jonathan's.
All right. So, brew pub. So this is like a weird omission. Technically, brew pubs and tap rooms. So there's tap rooms, a brewery tap room, and then brew pubs. Those are both mentioned in the municipal code. Only tap rooms are allowed in the zoning district. Unless you guys have qualms about brew pubs, I don't see why they're both not allowed.
What's the difference?
So you want like the technical difference? I can go get you the paper.
Look, the tap room doesn't have its own. It relies on vendors for anything other than what it's dedicated. Its express purpose is for.
It's the reason the Foxhole can't have food, but the Spurs restaurant next to it can.
Yeah.
And you can bring that food over.
We have two classifications of a brew pub or a whatever the
tap
other one is.
Or tap
yeah, room? It's a yeah, a tap room and a brew pub.
Tap room just can't have certain.
Has no food.
No food.
That's
you go in and get your booze and your liquor.
And
so you drink. And I think the brew pub, the tap room makes. I mean, it's a brewery. It makes its own, as opposed to anything else, where it's like it's not making its own. It's bringing in that product, and that's why it's classified.
In the tap room, are you going in to drink there? In addition to.
You're going to purchase that product that they make and possibly drink it there or cash and carry.
Okay. Yeah, and there's also like a threshold on like what they can produce too.
And if that's a tap room, what's the difference between a brew pub?
The moment you introduce food. But you have a kitchen and then...
Now, is any of this regulated by the state
that's
causing
that?
We were just up to two rivers.
Right. So, a couple weeks ago. And so... what we have is, you know, to hear a recommendation as to introducing a text amendment to specifically state that in the ordinance. And while I was doing a little research late, you know, prior to this meeting, I stumbled on something called the Growler's Law, which I think I had it in mind to table that, you know, to you to educate us more on that, because it might come up later in the future if you have more brew pubs.
Mm-hmm. What is it called?
The Growler's
Law.
Growler's Law. It states that once a brewery hits 20,000 barrels sold in a year, current Minnesota law dictates it can no longer sell growlers, and off sale bottles in its tap room.
Really?
And Minnesota is the only state in the country where craft breweries are not able to sell beer to go. I don't know how far that's true. This is Google, anyway, so it might not be.
So there,
I like your idea, and if you look at it from a common sense standpoint, common sense does not make sense not to serve food if you're serving alcohol.
Right.
I mean, come on.
Yeah, unless you go to
you're causing public potential public danger if you're allowing people to drink without
food. Yeah. But in order to follow due process, should we have a brewpub in Wilmer, we need to have it included, stated in the city ordinance. And
so that's the only thing. It's allowed. They're both mentioned in the municipal code, but brewpubs aren't allowed in the zoning ordinance at all. And so unless you guys have more qualms against it,
just like an old head kind of idea?
Old. Dry candy, Ojai County. Throwback, I think.
Like you have now with the Foxwood. They produce their own. They sell their own off-site. They sell their own off-site. They cannot sell their own food, but you can bring food in.
Yeah.
They can hire the taco truck to be outside.
Or you can go through the hole in the wall. Yeah.
They can hire the taco truck to be outside.
Yeah, but they're not profiting from that. That's another business that's coming in.
Yeah.
It's a mutually beneficial arrangement, I'm sure.
Well, you know, it's so what is that classified as?
It's the loophole. No, so that's a tap room, and it's the loophole.
Yeah. And how did they get approved for their location in this zoning district as a tap room?
So when the initial ordinance came in 2014, that was when the introduction of tap rooms and brew pubs came into the ordinance. And then since Foxhole is a tap room, it was the one that was put into the zoning ordinance.
That was the first of its kind in Wilmer.
Yeah. And so since like brew pubs weren't a thing yet, there was probably just an omission of, well, there isn't one, so we're not going to put it in the zoning ordinance. It wasn't what they needed.
But the brew pub is what sells their own food. They can sell food.
Yes.
Kind of like Granite City over in St. Cloud.
Yeah.
And why would that have been restricted? That's except for protection of the existing restaurant business?
Yeah, I don't know.
Lame.
I don't know.
That's not capitalism.
But it was two harbors. They had the brewery up there. I can't remember the name of it. But they had a small place you could come and sample and stuff. But then they got bigger, so then they had a shut that down, and then you have to go about a half a block down the street where there's a separate building to drink their stuff.
It's just like going to the Jack Daniel's distillery, purchasing a bottle of whiskey there, but do not open it until you cross the county.
Oh, really? Interesting. So I guess everyone supports the brew pub introduction.
Text amendment?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Is there any interest on developing new group pubs or tap rooms in Wilmer?
No, this is just an omission.
Yeah. The trend for breweries is declining steadily. It's not as hot as it was.
Are you talking about the small ones or the big breweries?
I
guess the local ones.
Right, the homegrown brands
like that.
It's declining sharply.
It was kind of
everyone was into craft beers, and the bubble has kind of burst on the craft beer market.
The brands that are going to stick are
getting bought up by InBev and bigger ones, and then the ones that are, either like really small and you can thrive, and kind of that middle range are going to start.
Exactly.
Dropping off, I think.
Yes.
No. Yeah, I guess just
get,
you'll have some sample stuff that you can throw at us.
And honestly, I think, and purely conjecture, but I have a pretty good feeling that Foxhole is at a point where they're thinking, this is not big enough for us.
It's
anymore.
Not. It is uncomfortable to be here.
Yeah.
And I haven't been in there in 5 years.
And if they're going to they're going to continue, they're going to want to expand. And if they can't expand where they're at, they're going to expand somewhere else.
Right.
That's going to be that. So.
Mm-hmm.
So the fun one, indoor gun range.
Okay.
I thought that's all decided.
Well, we should have one.
I thought the city council just...
Correct.
Yes.
But... So pretty much the municipal gun range is going to close safety issues. But the zoning ordinance only speaks to ranges does not mention indoor ranges at all. And so this is like two parts. One, do you guys think indoor ranges belong in the city of Willmar? And yes. If you think yes, then what zoning district would you like to see it in?
And can we allow an already existing facility to remodel their facility into an indoor gun range?
That would take a lot of upgrades in the...
Yeah. We did start several years ago. Well, it started with the candy mall, because that's what it was then. About each zone, whether it's our general business or whatever, has a list of acceptables.
Yep.
And then another list that's for conditional use.
Yeah, conditional.
And we went through the mall one and added a bunch of stuff and deleted a bunch of stuff. And what the program at that point in time was, we were going to go through each of the zoning, general business, and review those and add and delete. And I just kind of, I can't remember if we got one other one done besides the shopping center one.
I think it was
just those two. I thought we got two of them done.
Yeah.
But that's something that kind of, those are old and those need to be picked up and outdated. There's a lot of stuff in there that doesn't even exist.
Those lists are very much products of their time.
Update.
We can do that.
And all the paperwork is kind of in your files someplace as to how it was done, how the secretary just took and... and made all that stuff. And we went through and just, it was easy for us to check off or add and stuff like that. So,
that began as a conditional use permit from the owner of the mall.
Yeah.
They needed to find new tenants.
That's when the new guy bought it.
Yep.
When the downtown, uptown, whatever it's called.
Rockstep purchased
it. We had phone calls with them. They hadn't even read it, so they wanted all these things, and about 3/4 of what they wanted was already in there. But we added stuff like you used to have a church in the
educational facility.
But just so on its face, you guys think an indoor gun range in town makes sense somewhere?
Curious if it would be a privately owned business.
Yes, it would be a privately owned business, not a municipally owned one.
Privately owned, yes.
How is that regulated?
I guess the biggest question would be.
It can always be a conditional use permit. That way, you guys have full power over,
And it can be in more than one zone.
Yeah, if you want it to.
I mean, it's not saying it's got to be in general business, and then they want to build 100 feet down where it's something else.
Or it has to be industrial.
Gun range downstairs, 60 units up top.
But you can.
Okay.
Okay. Well, brew pub next door.
Quit
no parking.
None of that.
I think there's
60 units, two parking spots.
I think there's a real want and need for having the gun range, indoor gun range in Willmar, Candy Bar County, someplace. And if it's done properly, and I just haven't figured out how well they charge a higher cost for it, a private owner.
I bet you the insurance is astronomical.
Because there's...
You'd just like to see what done properly would mean? And then
part of that is probably, that is going to be a single-use facility.
Yeah.
Right. It's going to be a gun range and nothing else, because clearly...
How do you even make money on that, though?
I don't...
The lead abatement or issues are going to... Yeah.
What if it's a lead-free?
They got the same requirements.
We can
always talk about
anything,
it.
You can count on those limits to change.
Right.
I'm sure that lead particulate count in the air is going to be even less in 5 years and 6 years and 10 years. So, for gun range is this, but for X, Y, or Z business, it's going to be less. Just like, but it'll be a a projected issue, just like what is happening right now with this, with the municipal building and the gun range there. So it's
going to be almost going to have to be a standalone thing, else so that you don't have.
You can keep it.
Hey, the customers in the stores next door ducking and. But
for me, so we're recommending a single use facility, with not.
Whoa! Well, I mean, like, I think that's kind of the, direction we've got.
If someone wanted to open a gun range in Wilmer, we would look at it.
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
That's
well,
what we're saying.
Yeah.
But that's. But also that we need to figure out the zoning. But then also that probably needs to be a part of a bigger zoning project anyway. They're just kind of going through the uses, modernizing them, and making sure that we're still flexible enough, but we're not being crazy and just having things anywhere. And then also, like I said, it can be a conditional use where we can put boundaries on it, almost like adult uses. Like when it's. Where you don't want it near church, you don't want it near playground, all sorts of things. And so we can look into that for you guys and show you what other cities are doing and like what proper regulations would be. That way we can bake it into the code.
I would think it would have to be one, and I don't remember the whole order of them, but it seems to me general business would not be. It would have to be more.
I'd be opposed.
Yeah, no, it would have to go into what is the industrial? Some of those other ones that are.
Yeah.
Where you got bigger space and
where the daycare centers are now.
Yeah.
There's a daycare facility in the industrial.
There's a facility.
Oh, yeah.
Did it ever start?
Right next to the.
No.
It was the old.
It did not. It is defunct. It was
before. Yeah.
But I don't know if that one ever even got started off the ground.
The daycare?
Yeah.
No. I don't think it ever did open. No.
There was so much.
The building.
That building needed so much to bring it up to code for being able to have any kids in there.
And I was in that building a lot just to get around. I mean, there wasn't an open area there.
So we
anyway,
were on...
But yeah, it would have to be
bigger. Helping with
licensing. Well, this is why those axe-throwing ranges became popular. Wow. Because at least...
Yeah.
I don't know, the liability's got to be way less than guns.
Yeah. That's probably...
And they let those people drink and throw axes.
That seems so bad.
The place around is better than...
So the final thing, the housing ordinance. So maintenance companies or agents being within 50-mile radius of the city. And so pretty much from some of the complaints that... some of the issues we had with some of the landlords in town... people are starting to rely very heavily on, like, I don't have a maintenance guy, or it's going to take a while. And what that's doing to the complaints. And so possibly exploring making this a part of, like, the rental housing ordinance of very strict either 48 or 72-hour clause of that, like, you have to come fix this. And
or what?
Yeah.
Fine. You got to have some... teeth behind it.
I know, but it's like nothing ever happens though. Okay, so like my husband works on public works, right? And one of the things he does all summer long is mow other people's lawns. Because the city will send letters, mow your lawn. Mow your lawn, or we're going to charge you $700 an hour for this guy to come mow your lawn. They don't give a rip.
I will say, we recently had rental housing complaints that were $2,900 in fines. I did not forgive them. They were paid.
Wilmer?
Yeah. So,
there are many rental houses that are currently up for sale by through a certain developer in town that should be fined so rigorously.
Is that occurring with the individual rental housing units or the multi-units?
Individual housing units that they own just a lot of. And so they owned a lot of them, and it was, like I said, $2,900 in fines. They asked if they'd be forgiven.
It would be helpful. It would be helpful if you provided a few examples of other similar sized communities and how they worded their ordinances.
Yep, we can do that.
If you're going to cover these type of issues.
Yeah,
I could go with your thing here. I'm just worried about that. I could agree with that with one exception.
Mm-hmm.
That you cross off the 50-mile radius and make a 25-mile radius. You hear...
Planning Commission's getting tough.
No, listen, let me give you the example. Is that there are apartment buildings in Wilmer that helps somebody out in the buildings. And fire alarms get tripped or they have nuisance fire stuff. You know, somebody burned toast and it's got the whole thing going. And the police department, the fire department, just calling and calling, trying to get somebody to come to reset the alarm, stuff like that. And when they've got all this mega millions of dollars worth of trucks and people sitting around, the difference between somebody that's on call 50 miles away and somebody that's 25 miles or 20 or in town is astronomical. I mean, that's the... They sit and wait. And so, to me, that they need to have somebody close.
I mean, for emergency basis, they usually do have some sort of protocol in place where they'll have, like, say, their location manager or whatever, that person will be on call. And then for an emergency, but if it's like a maintenance thing, then that call gets bumped off to their maintenance team.
Now a lot of fire departments have kind of their master key set for the bigger places where they can don't have to be on the hook for an hour waiting for something.
They can get into the building, but then they'll reset it, or if something's going on, you know, they don't like to leave until.
And that's I remember going through trainings at the elementary school and saying, okay, here's the control panel. This is if it's going off.
Here's the mute button.
Here it is, basically. like, don't need to know anything else but that. That shuts off the noise. You can go home.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
Well, then the fire monitoring company should monitoring the.
Yeah, anyway, so that's my only comment on that.
I take it that this. You're directing this to mental units?
Yep, mental housing ordinance.
So let's say a certain developer houses their maintenance team. okay. So let's say Wilmer, this business owner, they house their maintenance team here, but they own properties in Spicer and in Pennock and in Hutchinson, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. What if it were the flip side, where this main developer in Hutchinson housed their maintenance team there, but they owned a property here?
That does exist.
Does exist.
If we went to Jeff's threshold of 25 miles, it wouldn't work. It wouldn't count.
Or what's that one that's in Montevideo that manages a lot of the properties?
This doesn't have to be an executive, you know, the owner, as long as he's got
the
qualified maintenance people that if you've got apartments or you've got, you know, whether it's like Willow Run, you know, that type of apartment versus housing.
Somebody with a key in 25
miles. Somebody
that
knows how to handle shut things off, this and that.
So one of the issues with one of the fines was one of the complaints against the landlord was that they asked for us, they needed their stove replaced, and they didn't have their stove replaced for over a year.
Oh boy, they hate replacing stoves. They hate replacing stoves. They will do anything not to do that. They will.
My fiance recently went without a stove for a month. She did not. She couldn't. She loves to bake. She was like beside herself.
Yeah.
She got her rent half off. So I can't imagine
what
someone would do for a whole year.
And then they flip it around on them like, oh, you shouldn't be lifting this part to clean it. You shouldn't be taking off the burners. Da 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 da. They try to make it their fault so that they can take their deposit. Mm-hmm. I know that case.
Well, these two things, the way I look at it, the top one with the 50-mile radius, that's like responding to
emergency
type situation. And the second one is, okay, now that the emergency is over or somebody has notified you that my stove isn't working, now you got 48 hours to deal with it. That's the way I interpret it. That's why I wanted that 50 miles to close down a little bit.
And I think the other thing, like with, I guess I have a landlord, but I don't have a maintenance guy, I guess. So pretty much, though, like if something were to break, my landlord would have to come over to fix it. Mm-hmm. Not like there is no, like, I'm going to call these people. I get lost to you.
Is that like a house unit or a multi?
No, I live in a house.
Yeah, well, that's typical, bro.
And
hey, they assume that role.
Yeah,
that's
how I feel.
For the
that's
same requirements.
Yeah.
But I agree that the emergency one should be separate. But my question is, if they're addressing it, is kind of ambiguous. Yes, I address the issue within 48 hours from the day the violation is issued. Now, you might print off a piece of paper that says they have a violation, and then you hand it to the Janelle, and she might put it in an envelope, and then she puts it in the outbox at the end of the day, and then it gets picked up by the postman the next day, and then it gets shipped to St. Cloud for who knows why reason, and then 5 days later, it might get to that person.
I was gonna say it'd be much more direct. Like someone in the department would probably hand deliver the violation.
Okay.
Yeah.
That would have to be clarified. When we were to do eviction notices, it would have to be sent, hand delivered to the apartment and sent certified mail.
Yeah. So are you guys gonna become the hairy little? My plumbing don't work. My drain is backed up. My stove don't work. Clearinghouse.
No.
When does an issue turn into a violation?
What
does it take to be?
And who makes that who determines it's a violation? Where does that?
So the rental housing ordinance has like some life safety, but then there's also quality of life stuff. Okay. And so then some of those will probably have to have like some thresholds.
Yeah, we need to go do some inspections.
Yeah, there's difference.
You can't issue a violation without some criteria that is
fairly. Like I said, this is all just like conceptual, philosophical meaning. That's why we're not actioning. We're not acting on things. From this though, like we'll draft up a lot of language from y'all's guidance tonight, and then we'll start to look at stuff and actually make sure some things are enforceable. That way, we can kind of start instituting some of the changes you guys want to see.
Not addressed, but resolved.
Yeah.
Something like that. Because, I mean, you send a violation for people having trash bags all around their house. Well, I moved it up to the curb now.
I told them to go put their trash on the other side.
Yeah.
Addressed. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm working on it, swear. Yeah. Check's in the mail.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Resolved. Like you said. Yeah.
But, all right, so, if you guys don't have anything else.
Great
job.
I think it's going to be short. A couple months ago, we approved the plat for whatever the company is going to be building out in Industrial Park. Correct?
Mm-hmm.
And that plat included the 300 feet east of west of the original one on the other side of the power line.
Did it?
That was in. Included in the plat, I believe.
I thought that.
And that's the way I remember it.
Okay.
It was the actual block that that they're building on, plus then the 300 feet to the west. And now, after that was all approved, I don't know if that plat has been recorded or not. But now they're not going to buy that further the 300 feet to the east. So does that have to come off of that plat because...
Is that the part that was over the road?
No.
That has to reflect in the final plot.
Yeah, so I mean, now that they're not buying that, I would, if that plat hasn't been filed with the recorder's office, then maybe that should be coming back to have the plat just be what they're buying.
Yeah, I know for sure it's not been recorded yet.
So that may depend on the owner of that parcel too, if they are willing to allow it to be.
City Wilmer owns all that.
It's still a city decision.
The city of Wilmer still owns that parcel until it's sold.
It's up to them to decide whether they keep it in a plat or not.
I mean, to me, it would just make sense that they would redo that. If that's the case.
This is fantastic. Oh, I love a motivational charger.
I do have. I wanted to read the proposed words here for an amendment to the parking ordinance downtown Central Business District. Now listen, tell me if you can support this, seriously. No public, city-owned parking lots and parking spaces within the Central Business District existing on the effective date of this amendment shall be reduced in number unless, one, the use or development replaces the lost public parking spaces, and two, the use or development complies with the parking requirements of this section 4 and places no greater burden on the existing public parking spaces. Now what that's doing is protecting the public spaces for the existing entire downtown business district community. It's not placing any greater burden on a new developer except to be able to accomplish your own service while you're using the public. Don't take away the public spaces that are already in use.
Because you're putting it on him to find the replacement spots.
So shouldn't Karen's Health provide their own parking spaces then instead of being in the public lot all day?
Ooh.
Now we're talking.
Say that again.
I could get behind the private parking garage.
Okay.
The city parking garage.
Shouldn't Karen's Health provide parking for their employees instead of them...
Sounds like people are exploiting the commons.
In the 3-hour limit parking lot?
Well, they are trying. They did buy that building across the street to the north and turn that into a parking spot. And they do have the right to buy that additional property, which who knows how they may develop it in the future.
That was
parking or expansion of services or motel.
You've got to remember the hospital was... City of Wilmer. It was city. It was Rice Hospital, City of Wilmer.
City
was doing that, and the city.
Who let that purchase agreement go through?
They provided the purchase agreements and related documents for review.
Really?
And they had a special hearing over at the fire station.
And there was no discussion about the parking?
Oh, there was discussion. They did not make it comfortable to address those issues.
Mm-hmm.
It was pretty.
Karen's Health is owned by the parking.
I want to hear this last one where it says closing statement.
What have you got?
I've been waiting for it. I want to hear this speech.
Hear it, man.
No, seriously, is there any interest in that?
Yeah, I don't
know.
I like that language. Yeah. It seems reasonable.
Because without it, what you're going to find is the concept of the Renaissance Zone originally was to rehabilitate existing structures. Okay, let's make new uses, or let's tear down and rebuild new. And the city has been using it to give away city property by using one little part of the real property project as the impetus to qualify, like the Quonset over here on Lot 25. Mm. Over here, it's going to be that old dentist office, which is right in the middle of that lot, which qualifies for the private developer, and then they're going to present it as, we have a purchase agreement or a memorandum of understanding on the sale of that, and that whole project will not go through unless you agree to give away the city parking lot.
They should move the post office. Put more parking there.
They may.
But, I mean, the idea behind that is it drives an innovation of that is needed to address those use parking issues and preserve the public spaces that are there.
And there are plenty of buildings downtown that need renovation, that really need that kind of effort, and those are not falling within what the Planning Commission is presenting. And I'm sure that's because there's no wealthy outside developers willing to take a look at it because of possibly the cost.
Yeah.
But it's easy for outside developers to say, hey, give us the tax breaks, give us the capital gains tax advantages, mm-hmm. and we'll take that bare land. It's going to be easy.
Yeah, we'll chew up some public parking while we're at it.
Maybe we need to get a developer to build a parking garage downtown. I think that'd be
even if it's a private one.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, I mean,
you could sell the parking spaces. Yeah.
You know, all of the apartment buildings in the existing downtown buildings, they're using that public parking spot for their parking. At night,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, there's no place else for them to go except on the city streets.
Well, when there's a snow emergency, they have to be off.
Yeah. Well, when there's a snow emergency, that's where they pile all the snow to get it out of downtown.
But I mean, you look at Minneapolis or Rochester. When I go down to the Mayo down there and stuff, that everything is you pay for
mm-hmm.
parking.
Absolutely.
So I mean, it's like.
As much as I'd like the Quick Trip, that would have been a great location.
Yeah.
Oh, I saw that right from the beginning. Why isn't the city jumping on this property? The old car dealership.
Mm-hmm. Swensey Old.
Yeah. I mean, there was their location for an
yep.
office building.
Or who bought Colleen School of Dance? That'd be a great spot.
Did somebody end up buying that?
That's what she
yeah.
said.
Yeah, they recently purchased.
And if it's Jason Butler, I'm going to throw a fit.
Yeah, I think, like I said, we can, we'll have all the language shafted up on some
the
stuff.
The newer one, not the old one. Down by the food show.
That was I don't know, I haven't gotten to that. But I'll look into parking garage development and kind of see what that can look like. Wilmer.
My thought is, if you preserve what we have, we may not need it.
Gonna lose
but
on the financial
argument.
If you want
more development,
yeah, I was gonna say you're gonna lose on the financial like argument for the taxes.
If the purpose is to continue to grow and revitalize
so.
The area, then
you
we will need more parking.
You got me there, Jeff.
There was so many tax breaks on that project; it wasn't just TIF.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, but. If nothing else.
Well, sorry. Well, it says it right there. Thank you all for coming. It's written right
there. I guess we probably have a motion to adjourn. This is just like a work session. So.
Okay. I'll move.